This is the Rails Coach Podcast, Episode 8. Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Rails Coach Podcast. I'm your host, Charles Max Wood, and this week we talk to Pratik Naik. It's been 2 weeks since the last episode. The reason is because I recently got a new job and I was working on putting together a little bit of a code sampler for them, and then I got a little bit behind on some of my freelance stuff, so I actually had to make that up, and I didn't get a chance to mix down this interview, even though I did it a week ago. Anyway, so with that being said, let me do a little bit more of the intro stuff, and then we'll get to the interview. First off, you can leave feedback for us, or for me, at podcast@railscoach.com via email, or by calling 801-753-8279. Just leave some audio feedback. We'll play it back on the show and hopefully answer some of your questions or even ask it to some of the guests on the show. That's about all I have as far as intro stuff goes. If you are wondering, the new job is with a company called Public Engines. They're responsible for crimereports.com, and it's just been a real exciting experience. But I'll go into that next week when I talk a little bit more about finding a good job and, you know, just what makes up a good job. So here's the interview, and I probably won't come back on the mic at the end. So thanks for listening. Hey, everybody. I'm here with Pratik from the Rails core team. You can find his blog at m.onkey.org. He's also written a web framework called Cramp, and you can find some of his work just checking out his blog or looking at the Ruby on Rails blog. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll go ahead with the interview.
Hi, so I'm Pratik Naik. I'm a member of the Rails core team, and very recently I joined 37 Signals as well. So I've been coding for like 5 years now professionally, and that's about it.
All right. How did you get started in programming?
No reason really. I did my BS in computer science, so that was one of the reasons.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was interested in beginning, but I didn't do any coding since I was 14 or whatever. I started like when I was 18, something like that. Yeah,
that's cool. You know, you pick it up when, I guess, when you're exposed to it, and then you keep doing it because you love it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, a quick question. This podcast, we kind of focus on what makes a good developer, or, you know, kind of what makes people excel.
Right.
According to you, what makes a good developer? Are there things that they do? Are there certain skills they have?
I think the main thing is you just have to practice and write more code. And it's also very important to read other people's code and not just keep writing. It's very easy to write code compared to understanding other people's code. So the two key things are read other people's code and write more code. That's about it, really.
So whose code do you read when you get time?
I mean, nothing in particular, but like I work on Rails all the time, so I try to understand each component properly just before making changes. Or I mean, it could just be anything, like whatever open source project that you work on. You could, like, instead of reading documentation, I usually try to read the code. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things.
Okay. Are there certain things that you do to practice? You mentioned practice. Are there certain exercises that you do, or is there something else that you tend to do?
Well, nothing in particular. Like, I think it's, I think it makes more sense when you have an actual use for something you're doing. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't just go and write some code because I want to learn something. But if I have a real use for it, if I'm writing a web application for a client or something like that, then it makes more sense to actually write that. So, yeah.
That makes sense. Now, before you went to 37 Signals, you were a freelance developer?
Yeah, I did freelancing for about 2 years.
What made you decide to change?
A few things, really. Like, I think it's very important to work with people who are smarter than you. Mm-hmm. So, while I was freelancing, I at certain point I stopped learning things. So then it started to get boring. And I had been contracting for 37 signals for like 6 months, 6 months now, more or less. So that was really fun. And I get to work from home. So
yeah, that's gotta be nice. So do they pay you to work on Rails, or do you?
Not really, no. That's just in my free time.
Okay. So you're still working on...
If I'm working on something and if I get stuck somewhere, if I find a bug, then of course I'm going to fix it. But I don't get paid to work on Rails as such.
Oh, okay. Yeah. What's it like being on a development team like the Rails core team that's kind of spread all over the world?
It really depends. Like, we don't have any structure or any concept of ownership. So you can just go and do your own thing most of the time.
Uh-huh.
So I guess it depends on how involved you want to be. But personally, I just do the work that helps me write better application. So I don't really care about refactoring most of the things. So,
well, that makes sense. That's interesting. Kind of an interesting take. So what's the process of becoming a member of the Rails core team?
Well, you just have to submit shitloads of patches. Oh. And there comes a point when they get annoyed by your request to commit your patch.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll just be like, why don't you just commit yourself?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So is there kind of a set size to the Rails core team, or is it more just, you know, oh, this guy seems good, we'll invite him to join?
Yeah, it's just more of that. So if somebody is contributing many patches, so for example, Jose Valim recently got commits. He's still not in the core team, but mm-hmm. he has the commit access because he submitted like 200 patches in less than a year.
Oh, okay.
So, you know.
That makes sense. I'm going to move over a little bit and talk about Cramp. You've been working on a web framework.
Right.
And how does that compare to Rails?
I don't think you can actually compare it to Rails because they're built on completely different principles. So Cramp is an event-based framework, so it's not really easy to write a Cramp application compared mm-hmm. to a Rails application, especially when you're used to the procedural structure. So Cramp is good only when you have to write an application which handles like thousands of open connection at the same time,
uh-huh.
which is not typical application. So if you're writing a chat server or maybe live polling or something like that.
That makes sense. There were some things that I did like about what I read about it. I was going to play with it, but I just didn't get a chance.
Okay.
One thing that I liked was just the whole idea of making it looked like your database call in your model and then having a callback that would that would handle whatever it got back. And I thought that was really cool because it, you know, just the whole asynchronous approach. It makes a lot of sense.
Well, it does make a lot of sense, but it does make things look a bit ugly as well. Like, you can't say find user and put them in this variable.
Mm-hmm.
So that becomes very ugly that you have to actually assign the variable inside a block.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. But at the same time, if you're accustomed to doing that kind of thing with, say, JavaScript or something.
Yeah.
You know,
then it feels quite natural.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Yeah. What prompted you to build Cramp? Did you have a project that you were working on that you needed this type of setup for, or?
Yeah, I did work on a project where I had to implement a streaming API, and like I had to do it I did it using just pure Rack without uh-huh. any framework. And that time I felt like it would have been nice if there was some framework which helped me implement that.
Okay.
So based on the learnings from that, I wrote Cramp.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Moving back to Rails really quickly. I read your post about Active Record Query Interface for Rails 3.
Right.
It looks really, really interesting. If I understand it correctly, basically you call your model, and then on the model you can just basically tack on more and more query parameters, and then when you actually use whatever you're using to call that query, then it actually goes to the database, gets the data, and then executes whatever you tell it to do with it.
Right.
And that's going to be available in Rails 3.0?
Yeah, it's already in master, so you could play with it. I think Rails beta should be out in hopefully a day or so.
Uh-huh.
So you could just play with that. It's already there.
Now, is this something that came out of the... Is it ARL? A-R-E-L?
Yeah, relational stuff? Algebra. Well, not exactly, but ARL library follows... It has the same mechanism for running queries.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the inspiration, and it does make it easier to write it under the hood.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, technically speaking, we could have done it without ARL as well, but that was just a nice opportunity that once we integrated ARL, it just became a lot easier. So.
Okay. Now, were you programming in something before Ruby, or is Ruby kind of your first big...
No, I did Perl for 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you like about Perl that you wish we had in Ruby?
Nothing really. Actually, Ruby feels a lot closer to Perl than you'd think. So, I mean, coming from Perl, Ruby was like a cleaner version of Perl. Like, Ruby is like what Perl should have been all along. So,
okay.
That was very natural. Yeah.
Are there any people out there that kind of helped you learn to program or learn to program in Ruby that that people can follow or get involved with?
Not really. I just I read the free book, which was I forgot the book, Programming Ruby, the free version.
Uh-huh.
And after that, I just got started with Rails, and yeah, the main thing was, instead of reading Rails books, I just started with a Rails project and tried to read the source code of Rails itself.
Huh.
And that was a bit slow in the beginning. Like, what should have taken 10 minutes took like 3 hours to understand. But I think that helped a lot eventually. Because Rails code is very complex.
Uh-huh.
And you do learn a lot of things when you actually read Rails code and understand how things work.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it's true, and it's something that I found. I haven't taken a lot of time to read the Rails code itself, but when I'm picking up another library or something, yeah, a lot of times I'll dig into the code and see what it does. And yeah, it seems like that more than anything else helps me out, because the documentation isn't always complete, and even when it is, a lot of times it's out of date.
No, and actually when you read the documentation, you only read the things that are written or what exactly, or the things that you're looking for. But when you actually read the code, you find things that you weren't looking for.
Right.
So that helps at some point in the future, usually.
Yeah, and it's true that, you know, most people who are writing the documentation write things that are only relevant to them, or, you know, that apply to what they're working on. So if you have a problem that's even a little bit different sometimes, it's far enough away from what they're documenting that you just you can't use what they used, and you have to find your own solution.
Exactly.
Are there things that you wish that the Ruby or Rails community did a little bit differently, as far as maybe supporting the core team, or, you know, just in general supporting the developers that join up?
Not really. I think one of the things is people should... just give me a second. Sorry for that.
That's okay.
I think so. One of the things that helped me learn was I tried to help other people in IRC and sometimes mailing list. So that really helps you a lot while you're learning as well, and it feels good when somebody helps you too. So I think people should try to hang out more in IRC and help the new developers, which was the case like a few years ago, but now that, you don't really see the famous programmers in IRC anymore, which is sort of lame, but yeah, I think that's probably the one thing.
Okay. Now, I've been reading your your blog, and it seems like you have a lot of opinions about, you know, what people should and shouldn't be doing in their code.
Right.
So I'm kind of curious, what are things that, you know, are just basic things that everybody should be doing with their code?
I think the main thing is you have to make your code seem really simple. Like, people try to make the code look really smart. So when somebody looks at your code, it has to, the first reaction should be, oh, this is very simple. I could have written that as well. I think that's the thing that's very difficult to do, to write simple code. I think it's much easier to write code that's complex. Like, people usually try to, I don't know how to say it, but I think just try to write simple code. That's it.
So when you say simple, are you talking about...
Simple to understand.
Okay.
If somebody, let's say if you read the code that I've written, it should be like, you should feel like that it was very easy to write that code, and you could have written that as well, very easily, without any trouble.
Right.
Yeah.
So just as an example, I mean, there are a lot of different ways that you can simplify your code. I mean, some people talk about the length and number of lines in their methods. Other people talk about naming conventions on their methods. Some people talk about, how you break up the functionality into methods. I mean, I think those are all part of it, but, you know, is there any key to that you can point out, or is it just kind of a combination of several things?
I think it's a combination of several things, but the basic things are, you have to make sure that it's easy to find the methods in your code. So let's say could you repeat that question, please? I got a bit lost.
No, that's fine. So basically, you know, I mean, there are a lot of different practices that people point out. You know, they say, okay, well, you know, keep your methods short, or, you know, keep your method names short, make them really descriptive, or, you know, a lot of different things. And I'm wondering, you know, is there one kind of basic philosophy to keeping the code simple? Or is it a lot of different practices that go into it?
It's definitely a lot of different practices, but the key things are, you should write proper tests for all the code. So if you're trying to understand a piece of code, you might want to look at the test first. Mm-hmm. So you actually understand what the code is trying to do, and then you can read the code itself.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so just write proper tests, have proper variable names, keep the method short, keep the files organized properly.
Okay. How do you typically organize your code? I mean, do you keep methods that are related to the same functionality together?
Typically. So I think it's good to keep the functionality, organize the functionality module-wise. So you can just keep all the related code in a single module and eventually include that in your class.
Uh-huh.
And then keep all the modules of a single class in the same directory structure.
So do you ever write modules that you only include in one class?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, because I typically, you know, hear people talking about mixing modules, as in you can spread the functionality around.
Well, not just that. I think it helps you to organize your code as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That makes sense. Let's see. I do have a few more questions. So are there any things that you're working on, maybe outside of 37 signals and outside of Rails, that you know, people would be interested in?
Not at the moment, really. I mean, I just started my job on 1st February, so it's really busy.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask you what it was like working for 37 signals, but...
I've been working for them for a while, so it's really fun. I mean, there are lots of smart people there, so which is what makes it so much better than any other company, especially in Rails.
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they're kind of the core entity when it comes to Rails, and so they tend to attract the top notch people who are interested in Rails. And
yeah, I think so. That's true.
So you get some good people in there.
Yeah.
So what frameworks do you usually use as far as like testing and things like that?
I just try to use a test unit most of the time, but I do use SUDA when I need nested contacts, because you can't just nest classes inside test unit.
Mm-hmm.
So combination of SUDA and test unit, I would say.
I haven't used SUDA. How does it stack up against some of the other ones? It looks similar to RSpec in certain respects, but...
I think SUDA is much closer to test unit in philosophy. So mm-hmm. if you are used to test unit, then it's very natural to use SUDA. You don't have to use all the DSL. Personally, I just use context, and that's because I want to nest my test
mm-hmm.
to have the common setup method and all that.
Okay. Have you done much with the other frameworks like MERB or Sinatra or some of those others?
I did play with all of them. I think Sinatra is okay, but I think it's much overrated. Like, I would not write anything that takes more than 30 minutes in Sinatra.
Uh-huh.
Because eventually you're going to run into things that will just take more time with it. Because there is no structure. There is no structure. It's like writing a React application without any framework.
That makes sense. I have another question about testing. Do you feel like you should have 100% test coverage, or should you just be covering certain aspects?
Not really. Eventually, talking about the Rails application, like previously I used to write lots of unit tests.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would try to test each and every method in my code. But over the time, I started writing more and more integration tests. So let's say if I write a functionality where user logs into the site. So previously, mm-hmm. if I had written 10 different methods in my model, I would test them all. But now I'll just write an integration test there. User goes to the site, enters a username and password, and makes sure he's logged in.
Uh-huh.
So that indirectly tests all my models as well.
Okay.
And I think that's much better because you spend less time writing the test,
uh-huh.
and it's a lot more flexible when you move around things. Like if I change my method name or if I move it to a different file, different module, my test is still going to work, and it's actually testing the real thing. Not just the implementation.
Okay, I'm going to play devil's advocate for a minute. I'm wondering if that doesn't complicate your tests a little bit.
I don't think so. Like, I'm not sure. Have you played with WebRat?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So, I think that's really cool. Like, I don't think it complicates it at all. In fact, it makes them much shorter.
Is there any chance that you could that you're more likely to miss something by doing that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm just testing the most common path most mm-hmm. of the time. So, yeah, I could miss some edge cases. But, I mean, if I have time, I might write some unit tests for that. But I wouldn't really hold my breath for that.
Okay. Now, do you usually write your tests first, or do you write them after you've written your code?
Depends, really. Like if I'm fixing a bug, I tend to write the test first. But if I'm writing something new,
uh-huh.
like many times I don't even know how I'm going to write it or what exactly I'm going to write. So in that case, I just write the code first and then test it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not too strict about test first.
Okay.
I think you just have to find your own style. There's no one ring to rule them all.
Uh-huh. I had a question and I forgot it. Do you have any tips or ideas of what new developers could do as far as getting involved with Ruby or Rails or just any programming language or framework for that matter?
Well, I mean, if you already know some Rails, I think the best thing to do is to try and work on the framework itself. So mm-hmm. you could start hanging in IRC, start to monitor the commits, find if you think something is wrong, maybe have a look at the Lighthouse. See if there's some patch that you could work on. Or if you're writing code and you come across a bug, make sure you fix that and not just submit the ticket.
Okay.
So I think, those are the things.
Another question I have is, does Cramp work with like ActiveModel or some of the other?
It does use ActiveModel for validations, but that's it.
Okay. I really want to thank you for coming onto the podcast and doing the interview. It's always interesting to talk to people who, get out there and put their code out there and really get involved in the community and just find things that that interest them and you know, get the opportunity to get involved with people who are passionate about this stuff. So, you know, I appreciate it, and thanks for coming on.
Thanks for your time too.
All right, we'll hopefully see you around.